Rock music is a phenomenon of such scope and magnitude that it could easily be discussed from any of several different points of view, plus of traditional morality. But we feel the real root is spiritual, and that the real power behind rock music is satanic. Therefore, we are going to look at rock music in light of God's holy word. According to the Bible, Satan is not a cartoon caricature with a pitchfork and horn. A living personality with over 40 names. He is described as the anointed cherub, prince of this world, prince of the power of the air, god of this age, the destroyer, deceiver, and many others. Yet other passages describe his original purpose, which was to praise God through music. In Ezekiel, he is literally described as musical instruments. Since his beginning, he has always had a great deal to do with music. He is also described as coming to us in deception as an angel of light. Throughout our history, his purpose has been to influence our actions, our motives, our desires, and our loyalties. Satan has never stopped trying to become our God. This program is about him and one of his greatest efforts. It is about the God of rock. Youth and rock music. The two seem to be one and the same in our society. What are they listening to? Is it just music, or is there more to it? Advertisers and modern scientific study both tell us that the more often a message is heard and seen, the more apt the hearer is to act upon it. A recent survey found that 85% of American youth listen to over 6 hours of rock music every day, 7 days a week. If a consistent and progressing message exists in rock music, it would make this medium the most powerful influence on our youth today. More powerful than the government, the educational system, parents, or the church. If there is a consistent message, how could the same message possibly be embodied in the music of literally thousands of independent bands? And who or what could be behind something which could only be described as indoctrination? Is there really a message to all of this? You decide. You be the judge. I'd like to introduce you to what may well have become the greatest kidnapper of all time. Watts of audio power, it is difficult to give you more than just an impression of the sound levels actually present at a modern concert. But let's go back to the beginnings of modern rock and roll. The rock concert phenomenon definitely gained momentum when England came to America in what has commonly been called the British Band Invasion.
It's been a hard day's night, and I've been working like a dog.
When the young lads from Liverpool stepped off the plane in 1963, they brought with them a cause, a purpose, rebellion against the establishment. John Lennon said that sex, rock and roll and dope would be the base for the takeover of America. American youth were already being stirred up by their own psychedelic bands, such as the Grateful Dead, Jim Morrison and the Doors, and others. A very pivotal point for rock music on the American scene was Woodstock. Never before in the history of America had such a number gathered to demonstrate new concepts of sex, drugs, rebellion, and music. They came from all over the world. They came by ones and twos. They came in groups. They came 500,000 strong. Who or what possibly could have this kind of magnetic power? They came for reasons unknown to them at the time. Listen to the musicians as they spoke to the ever-growing sea of revolutionary youth. The time, 1969.
Okay, people, we got a time. Okay. On the front page, you have on the left a very big aerial photo of a huge mass of people, which are you. And it says, "Music was the magic for throngs at Woodstock Music and Art Fair. Towers near the stage hold loud speakers. At Folk Rock Fair, camp out in the sea of mud." Dig it, dig it. Wait a second, I'm doing this. Bedford, New York, August 16th. Despite massive traffic jams, drenching thunderstorms, shortages of food, water, medical facilities, young people swarmed over this rural area today for the Woodstock Music and Art Fair. The prospect of drugs and the excitement of making the scene, the young people came in droves, camping in the woods, bumping in the mud, talking, smoking, and listening to wailing music.
They came to see Gracie Slick of the group Jefferson Airplane wake up the crowd singing about revolution.
All right, friends, you have seen the heavy groups. Now you will see morning maniac music. Believe me, yeah. It's the new dawn.
They came to see Janis Joplin. They came to hear Bob Height and Al Wilson of the group Canned Heat. All have since died from drug overdose. They came to see the Jimi Hendrix Experience. They listened as he played the Star Spangled Banner by Feedback Guitar. This song made his very name a rock deity, even till now. Thousands burned the American flag at this event. They watched Hendrix as he sacrificed that which he valued most in his life, his guitar. He was selling his soul for the cause, revolution. Many have called rock music a subculture of society, but actually, it's a counterculture, seemingly dedicated to destroying the values, morals, and lifestyles held by the vast majority of the world's population. Although Woodstock was reported to be relatively peaceful, riots associated with rock concerts began occurring frequently from Miami to San Francisco, from New York to Los Angeles. Authority was being challenged by music. A new morality was presented, the three major themes being illicit sex, the free use of drugs, and absolute denial of all systems of authority. In other words, sex, drugs, and rebellion. Woodstock was over, but not its effect. Musicians ceased writing about their own experiences and began to write to cause experiences in others. They began to teach. After Woodstock, the concert scene gained momentum. However, there were numerous disasters, such as the Altamont Speedway concert in 1969. The Rolling Stones had come to the Bay Area for what was supposed to be the Woodstock of the West Coast. The Stones had hired Hell's Angels for their security. The crowd, 300,000 in number, began to become uncontrollable. Nudity was rampant. Wine spiked with LSD began to circulate. Paul Cantor of the Jefferson Airplane surveyed a sea of people and later admitted that he knew things were getting bad. And then Mick Jagger, nicknamed by his own peers as the Lucifer of Rock, had the lights turned off and played this little song, Sympathy for the Devil.
Please allow me to introduce myself. I'm a man of wealth and taste. I've been around for a long, long year. So many a man stole a faith. I was around when Jesus Christ had his moment of doubt and pain. Made damn sure the pilot washed his hands. Pleased to meet you. Hope you can find a way. But what's puzzling you is the nature of my game.
When the lights came back, a young black had been stabbed to death at the foot of the stage. The concert ended with death for several and massive destruction. It was called the Apocalypse. At Altamont. You may say that's history. Okay, let's come to the present. If you can believe it, the concert scene has become progressively worse. Many more have died since Altamont. Parents and persons in responsible positions are often kept in the dark as to what really goes on. You see, an outdoor concert is a law-free area. Kids can do anything they want to do, or rather, anything they're big enough to do. It's a dangerous gathering, probably the most potentially volatile gathering of people who currently assemble for any one purpose. It is a virtual scene of kids. It cannot be policed. It can only be contained. Concert promoters must hire inside security to hold a facade of order. The average concert will use as many as 300 to 400 large guys, motorcycle gangs, jocks, or just plain street fighters. As the kids enter the concert area, they are stripped by t-shirt security of any cameras or film, recorders, or other items that would allow anyone to know what is going on inside. However, they are allowed to retain any drug paraphernalia they may be carrying. If resistance is offered, look for a trip to the hospital. The record itself is only part of the music industry. The recorded song is not the same as the live group. When a record is played, the record is controlled and manipulated by the hearer. But the live event is a totally different atmosphere. At a concert, it is the audience which is controlled. Today, after 20 years, the musicians and promoters are still teaching sex, drugs, and rebellion. The first major theme of rock music is sex, the animalistic idea that if it feels good, do it.
Why don't we just do it in the road? Why don't we do it in the road? Why don't we do it?
There are many moral reasons why young people shouldn't do it in the road, to say nothing of it. Trying to blend humor with horror is not easy. Some of the following visuals may be offensive, but sexually explicit music has kidnapped the minds and progressively lowered the morals of our youth, with virtually no one becoming aware of the process. It is accomplished by repeating sensual messages over and over again, progressively becoming more explicit, more perverted in nature, while all the time using the medium which most people consider to be merely entertainment. It was during the early 70s that some musicians began to realize the power they possessed over an audience. Bizarre props and antics were used unashamedly. The kids loved it. The crowds went wild. And the parents were almost totally out of the picture. There has been a rapid progression from being lyrically suggestive to extremely explicit. This is Prince, a current superstar. His album, Purple Rain, has sold multiple millions of copies.
Knew a girl named Nikki, I guess you could say she was a sex fiend. I met her in a hotel lobby, masturbating in magazines.
In the 50s, performers were condemned because they wiggled their hips. Today's performers actually masturbate in front of their audience. The album covers give you an idea of the kind of morality the bands have been selling, such as these from The Plasmatics and The Scorpions. Or this old Stones album cover. A young girl can actually unbuckle the belt and unzip the zipper. Hundreds of top 40 songs and videos teach illicit sex in every form. For example, in the 70s, groups such as AC/DC sang, "Let Me Put My Love Into You." Rod Stewart's million seller, Tonight's the Night, tells the girl to spread her wings and let him come inside. Music has played a leading role in conditioning young people to accept this new lifestyle as normal.
You better get yourself running. I got a hurricane coming.
Suggestive music has subtly conditioned an entire society to just walk by and accept as a normal lifestyle actions which never would have been accepted 10 years ago or even 5 years ago. Homosexuality and bisexuality are major teachings in the lives of some musicians, such as this all-male group, The Tubes, or these self-professing gays called the New York Dolls, or David Bowie and Lou Reed. David Bowie was voted the number one male singer and the number three female singer in the United Kingdom at the same time during the middle 70s. Or Boy George, who has literally rocked the world. Sadomasochism, first portrayed in the leather-studded costumes of bands such as Kiss, was not just hype or weird dress. It has become an actual culture or lifestyle, and even popular middle-of-the-road groups such as Dr. Hook advocate the infliction of pain for the purpose of sexual pleasure. Do you know what necrophilia is? It's having sex with a corpse. This is now a very in thing in certain parts of the country. Alice Cooper was singing of this insanity a long time ago in such songs as I Love the Dead and Cold Ethel.
No one thing, no lie. It's a picture that's an Eskimo pie. She's cool in bed. That's gotta be, cause Ethel's dead.
If advertisers and modern psychologists are correct, the impact of continual messages of illicit sex over the past 15 or 20 years should have, by this time, at least begun to change our society. Statistics reveal that for the past 10 years, the sexual activity of the average 16-year-old female has progressed from 1 out of 15 being sexually active to 1 out of 2. 1 out of 10 become pregnant. The figures on abortions and venereal disease are far beyond anything seriously projected 10 years ago. A new plague, AIDS, spread primarily by homosexual activity, threatens to become a major medical disaster by 1990. Child pornography is also a recurring theme in rock music. These album covers from as far back as the 70s by Led Zeppelin and Fleetwood Mac speak for themselves. Today, sexual abuse of children is a major problem in our society. Up to 5 million boys and girls from less than 1 year old to age 16 are sexually abused each year. Incest, bestiality, and every other form of sex imaginable is taught by rock music. Elton John said, "I do not see anything wrong with a person going to bed with someone of the same sex, but I do draw the line at goats." The year he made this quote, he put $60 million in the bank. Rock music, like pornography, tends to deal with the forbidden areas, the taboos of our society. As one concept or activity becomes accepted and normalized, then that which is behind the music seeks something new, something shocking, something more grotesque, something more perverted than before. The median age is getting lower. It is common to see young people from 12 to 17. Often, however, concerts are heavily populated by kids who are even younger. This is Wendy O. Williams in her performing attire before an audience whose average age is 12 years old. Another major theme in rock music is drugs. Sex, drugs and rebellion, music and kids. Jerry Rubin, in his book Do It, said, "You give me that combination, and I can pull down any society." Many musicians and promoters condone the free use of drugs. Some, such as Lou Reed, even shoot up on stage. The song lyrics blatantly teach drug abuse.
If you want to get down, down on the ground, okay.
We are at epidemic proportions concerning drug abuse in this country. Rock musician teen idols are constantly being busted for drug possession. And at every concert, paramedics and doctors are kept quite busy. A typical concert is like a drug supermarket. Often, youth have their first experience with drugs at a concert arena. Sometimes, they have their last. Just witnessed is a typical scene at any rock concert. Drug overdose. Many youth are alive today because of the concert paramedics. Some walk away after the concert. Some wake up in the hospital. Some never wake up. Of teachings other than Christian have always been prevalent in rock music. From the Eastern cults promoted by the Beatles to the overt Satanism of Venom, non-Christian religions, as well as the occult, are clearly preached by the rock musicians. In the 60s, it was mostly Eastern cults, yogis, Baha'i, TM, S, and other New Age forms of Hinduism. But today, an alarming number of groups are advertising and advocating Satanism. Satan has finally come to the forefront with what he has desired all along, the outstretched hands of worship. Album cover art, posters, and comments from the musicians reveal a great deal about the philosophies and goals behind the music. The detail and clarity of purpose in the album art is not mere imagination or overzealous creativity. It reveals a working knowledge of the occult. The Satanist overtones of rock were merely hype associated with a wild public image. However, the former Led Zeppelin was saturated with Satan's message. Jimmy Page, lead guitarist with the group, owns the largest occult bookstores in England. Alice Cooper supposedly got his name from a 16th century witch following a deal with the devil for his fame. Some groups have become literal cults. One star stated that rock concerts are the churches of today. The group Styx derived their name from the river that encircles hell. Stevie Nicks has been quoted, "Sometimes when we're on stage, I feel like somebody's just moving the pieces. We don't have any control over this." Peter Criss says, "I believe in the devil as much as I do in God. You can use either to get what you want." Gene Simmons' grotesque tongue gesture is an ancient symbol in demon worship. Iron Maiden advertises the Beast on the Road, and the lead singer calls himself the Beast. This is the group Motley Crue. They're advertised as every mother's nightmare. Their albums and stage concerts often display a large pentagram. This is considered one of the most powerful of the satanic symbols. Other satanic symbols, like satanic S's, abound in the artwork, sets, and on the person of the musicians. Even the popular trend of backward masking has satanic overtones. Backward speaking and reversed symbols have long been elements of satanic worship. Aleister Crowley, the author of one of Satanism's sacred books, instructs initiates to write, think, and speak backwards. It becomes almost frightening when you realize that a majority of the groups employing backward masking admit they have been heavily influenced by the teachings of the same Aleister Crowley. A survey released in 1984 indicated that the population of witches in the United States is nearly one half of that of clergymen, and covens are being organized in high schools. Even performers who profess no belief in the occult use it to sell more records. Michael Jackson's fans are often only 5 or 6 years old. This is the cover of Uriah Heep's satanic album, Abominade. There are many other groups. The following copy appears under a reversed picture on the back cover of the Venom album, Welcome to Hell. We're possessed by all that is evil. The death of your God we demand. We spit at the virgin you worship and sit at Lord Satan's left hand. To all the major themes of rock music: illicit sex, misuse of drugs, perverted worship, and rebellion. Though some may define rebellion as anarchy, the Bible defines rebellion as witchcraft. For rebellion is as the sin of witchcraft, 1 Samuel 15:23. Rebellion has always been a central theme of rock music. Joan Jett, one of Top 40's punk dolls, says, rebellion is the center, the heat, the very core of the rock music world. The blatant denial of all systems of authority is the message of most current touring bands. Protest songs by the hundreds created an atmosphere of rebellion, which led to tragedies from as far back as the Kent State incident to the more recent riots at the Yas Festival in California, where David Lee Roth of Van Halen said, "Let's show the pigs what rebellion is all about." The result was devastating. As far back as the 1960s, rock groups knew how to create or control crowd hysteria by very carefully controlling the sequence of rhythms. John Phillips of the Mamas and the Papas said, "We know how to do it, and most of the other groups do too." Rebellion is seen in the faces of the musicians themselves. It is an attitude as much as it is action.
Leave them kids alone.
An attitude is more caught than taught. Our public schools have extreme discipline problems. The walls truly are getting thicker. Today's youth are becoming harder to reach. The group Jefferson Airplane, since turned Starship, put it clearly long ago. Our music is intended to alienate children from their parents. This is Quiet Riot, described as one of the most destructive bands on the road today. From middle-of-the-road groups and soft rock to heavy metal and punk, rock musicians teach no rules, no laws. The logical end of this philosophy is survival of the fittest, absolute anarchy. The group Twisted Sister tells kids, you don't have to take it anymore. Parts of the rock scene are bizarre beyond description. The marks of punk rockers stem from rejection, self-infliction of pain, safety pins through the mouth and nose, mockery of authority, mockery of Jesus Christ, sadomasochism, and dances such as The Clash, Strangle, and Slam have literally claimed lives. Lesbianism and homosexuality permeate this scene. Avid followers give themselves to bizarre groups and paint satanic symbols on their foreheads. Insanity has become a recurring theme in rock music today. One young musician has recently said, our generation has not gone through a war. We'll just create our own in the streets.
Once that you decided on a killing, first you make a stone of your heart. And if you find that your hands are still willing, then you can turn a murder into art.
Blatant violence saturates the rock scene today. The rock world's view of tomorrow is one of violence and destruction at every turn. The impact of these messages on our society has already begun to take its toll. Our people are becoming increasingly violent. Virtually every major city has reported random killings simply for the sake of killing. From as far back as Charles Manson and his infatuation with the Beatles song Helter Skelter, to the more recent Night Stalker and his worship of AC/DC, the violent effect of music can no longer be denied. The Night Stalker was said to perform violent satanic rituals on his victims. Later, he admitted he was acting out the lyrics to one of his favorite songs, Night Prowler.
Too scared to turn the light out, 'cause there's something on your mind. Was that a noise outside the window? What's that shadow?
You don't have to listen to their music anymore. Just look at the names of some of the newer groups provided by the National Coalition on Television Violence. Attack, Coming Blood, Dead Kennedys, Killing Joke, Rash of Stabbings, Screaming Dead, Slaughter and the Dogs, Three Teams Kill Four. But violence on others is not the ultimate act of rebellion. According to figures from the National Statistic Clearinghouse in Denver, Colorado, the number one killer of teenagers in the United States is suicide. Some anguished parents and friends are beginning to play their children's favorite records and are discovering the gruesome facts. Dennis Bartz, a gifted student, told someone he would be with the devil tonight and hanged himself on the school grounds. His high school friends angrily blamed rock music. Or David White, 17, who shot his father and killed the family dog before placing the shotgun under his own shin and pulling the trigger. A suicide note said, "Please don't blame my friends. I shall be buried with my Black Sabbath album." The list goes on and on. 400,000 attempted suicides every year. But numbers are very impersonal. They fail to deal with the tragedy and the intense family grief which accompanies every suicide. The only way to begin to grasp the horror of these numbers is to pull one out of the pile and realize that each of these young people was a living, breathing human being. They died believing they would be saved by the God of Rock. The following tape is provided by the National Child Safety Council. This is the voice of Dexter, a young man who, in the basement of his home, shot himself while making a tape to his parents. Listen to the resolve in his voice. Hear the lack of emotion as he speaks of his coming death. You will have to listen closely.
This is a great punishment that I am bestowing upon myself, not only physically, but from what I have read, I'm going to be suffering eternally for this. But life sometimes seems so long to wait. I really don't have, all I'm actually doing is existing. I have thought it over many times, and there really isn't nothing to live for. I don't think there is.
Wow, I my words twisted up here. I can't hardly talk sometimes.
Well, I could actually sit here and jabber on about all my troubles, but I'm not going to because I just don't feel like it. Everybody has troubles, you know. So I won't talk anymore about my problems. All that to say is I'm not going to give no sentimental speech here, if you know what I mean. So I think I'll just close with a blank statement, maybe kind of an idiotic statement.
This is Dexter Gardner speaking. I am signing off.
While not everyone who listens to rock music ends up committing suicide, the subliminal conditioning of the consistently repeated messages of rock music definitely prepare the listener to accept illicit sex as normal, drugs as helpful, violence as necessary, suicide as a viable option, and satanic worship as rational. The God of Rock is conditioning the hearts and minds of today's youth to accept a new world, a new order, a new faith, and a new ruler. It is obvious that the second coming is at hand. What we have is not a music problem, but a problem of lordship. Rock music is only a blatant example of what Satan is doing more subtly through other styles of music, through television, through news, through politics, and even recreation. Anything which separates us from God is idolatry. All Christians today are in a spiritual warfare, yet many of us are not armed because we are ignorant. Surely our people can perish for lack of knowledge. We have been deceived by Satan. We think we can get by with religion on Sunday mornings and no commitment or relationship the rest of the week. One cannot listen to Satan's messages and learn to become like Christ. There is no middle ground. Does what you have seen promote the kingdom of God or the kingdom of the Antichrist? You be the judge.